Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
We'll talk to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian and Oregon Live. Charlie's in Vancouver. He's called in. What's up, Charlie?
Wow, John. First of all, thank you very much. But as soon as you started talking about it, I kept thinking to myself, no, the dream is to have a great family. The dream is to look back and have your child love you unconditionally and say, wow, thank you for being there for me all of the time. And not just when it was convenient, maybe like a professional athlete would be as far as making it in the major leagues. So I think both of you ended up being tremendously blessed, and I hope that you guys can see that perspective, and I hope I'm not upsetting you by saying that.
No, it took me like 40 years. As I'm writing the column today, it took me like 40 years to go, oh, you know what? He wasn't walking away from his dream. Like sometimes as a parent, like just think about it. Think of the sacrifices you make as a parent. Think about, you know, all you want are to keep your kids safe at first. Then you want to provide for them. Then you want to send them to the best college. Then it becomes about being a life coach to them, and they're in their 20s. And I think parents totally relate to that. And maybe it just took me having three daughters to look back and go, oh, I don't need a time machine. I just need to tell my dad thanks. Because sometimes there are things that are more important than your own dreams. Nick Daschle of the Oregonian, he's got kids. Nick, you know what I'm talking about with your kids? You now have a bunch of kids in college. You got a whole pack of them in college. And your priority now is what? Life coach, making sure they get an education and their pathway.
Yeah, mostly you just got to keep reminding yourself, how old they are and what they're capable of doing at this stage and, supporting the things that, they want to do. But, we made some sacrifices along the way to get them this far. Well, I actually only have one left in college. The other one is long since gone. She's teaching fourth grade. But, yeah, the other one, it's tough right now just because, she should be in San Diego where it's probably 80 and, getting ready for finals down there. And she's been home for 2 months, taking online classes and, and I don't know whether they're, I have no idea whether they're going to go back in the fall. So, yeah, we're just, trying to make things, as easy as possible for her right now without, just totally handing things to her.
Yeah. And give me an idea, because I can remember my dad telling me when I first, my oldest was born. So it was 17 years ago. I can remember my dad telling me, they're easy right now. He said they get harder in their 20s. What was he talking about?
I don't know. When my kids were young, my neighbor came up to me and he said, wait till they're 18. You think you've spent a lot of money up to 18. Wait till they turn 18. And I just, they were probably 8 and 2 at the time. And I'm just going, oh, okay. Well, seems like they're expensive enough right now. And boy, was he right. There is no shortage of things that they seem to need. After 8, I keep telling you that too, and you're getting there. You're close.
Appreciate that.
Those college bills start coming in, but yeah, I'm cleaning out my office right now, and I'm going through some stuff, and I found a coupon book that my oldest daughter made for me probably when she was 8. I'm going to present it to her when she comes home because it's got a lot of coupons in there. It doesn't have an expiration date. There's one for vacuuming the house, one for folding laundry. Yeah, I'm hanging on to that one. I just found that. It's about 20 years old.
I like that. You got to redeem those. Just line them up.
I'm going to, just to see the look on her face.
There's nothing more obnoxious than like being in line at the grocery store and somebody who hasn't taken the time to clip all the coupons and organize them is trying to get straight. But I find this joyful. Like, I would like to have a video of you presenting her with, hey, by the way, you owe me a massage and a wash the car and mow the lawn. I'm going to redeem those in the next 2 hours. Thank you very much.
There was a car wash one in there too. I wish you'd home right now, because all three of our cars could use a good scrubbing.
Nick Daschle of The Oregonian is with us, OregonLive.com. He covers Oregon State. We've been talking a lot about a Pac-12 only schedule. Would the Beavers welcome that, or are they indifferent to it? How do you see that, and what do you think of that proposal? If the Pac-12 just plays a Pac-12 schedule.
Well, I mean, first off, I don't see how any team, any school can you know, be all that picky right now. It's, you know, you're not going to get everything you want. And, you know, an all conference schedule is a pretty nice alternative, I think. I'm seeing stuff about proposals about home and home possibility, you know, games like that. And I was thinking today, I was like, what if Oregon State, Oregon or Washington, Washington State and Boise State had to get together and do home and home bus rides, you know, and just play 8 games. I was just thinking about it. Nobody's ever mentioned that. I was just thinking about, you know, if they couldn't get on planes and so they just played home and home, you know, 8 games and called it a season. Because the Californians, boy, they're, you know, I don't know what's going to happen down there. I understand, you know, the California state schools aren't quite like, you know, the rest of them, but still, I mean, it's definitely some possibilities there. But yeah, I think Oregon State would be perfectly fine with, you know, an 11 game Pac-12 schedule, because, I mean, they're probably trading in two, well, one sure win, probably a second win, and then a tough road game for a Colorado team. You would think they could probably beat, and then USC is their other miss. So, you know, those two, you know, I think that sounds like 1-1 to me. If they're playing those games, but you're playing them on paper, so trading in two and one for 1-1, I think that'd be okay.
There's part of this schedule that appeals to me because I feel like college football is way out of control, with the college football playoff seeming like that is the end all be all. If you don't make the playoff, your season's not successful. Your conference is not successful. And maybe what this would do is return us to a more regional feel, a more true college experience. And I keep thinking Pac-8 or Pac-10 years, where everybody played everybody. You got to determine who was champion, and there was something important about being the conference champion.
Oh, man, I used to say that all the time. High schools have gotten out of that, too, where all that's mattered in the last several years is where you rank in the OSAA rankings as opposed to who wins a league title. And I've always thought, God, it seems like a league title should mean something, but it's sort of lost its meaning. But yeah, I'm a proponent of everybody playing everybody in a conference when it's possible. SEC obviously couldn't do it with 14 teams, but boy, if you got 11, you know, you got 12 teams in a league, you play 11 games and one non-league game, what would be wrong with that? I don't see any harm in that.
I kind of think there's some presidents in the Pac-12 that would support it. They have struck me as, you know, not being typical sports fans for a long time. They're into the Olympic sports and volleyball and women's basketball, and maybe they would just be happier going, hey, we're going to cut down our expenses, we're not going to travel, we're not going to try to play that SEC game. Maybe there's a silver lining to all of this. Nick Daschle with us of the Oregonian. If USC can't practice, and that has been a talking point, Los Angeles County's got a dense population. They've had per capita more positive cases than anywhere else in the Pac-12. Let's say USC can't play a game, can't practice because of, you know, they're a hot spot for the virus, and it's going to take them a little longer. Do you push the whole season back to the spring, or do you ask USC to go play their games in Arizona?
Well, it depends on how long you need to push the season. I mean, right now I'm not a doctor, but I think October sounds, you know, quite a bit more doable than September. And yeah, I don't know the Pac-12 can really play a season without the California teams, and especially, you know, their bell cow, USC. I think if they can't play by, say, October 10th, I think they got to look hard at moving the whole thing to 2021 at some point by February or something. But yeah, because I just don't know how you have a league that people are going to be interested in without a USC in it.
When you look at the questions that remain for Oregon State's athletic department, what's at the front of the line when it comes to questions that the fan base needs answered?
Well, I mean, football's always going to be the first one, and how much, you know, they're going to have to make some cuts. Where do you start cutting? Do you cut stuff out of football as with everything else, or do you try to keep football intact as much as possible and maybe sacrifice some of the non-revenue expenditures? I'm not saying where you're cutting the entire coaching staff or anything like that, but. Well, you know, I think they got to try to keep their football staff intact as much as possible. Maybe, you know, losing a few of those, you know, maybe a few personnel from the bottom end of the roster. But, I think the fact that, you know, if you can't get fans in the stadium, that's a pretty big hit for Oregon State. And so, I kind of think that they're, you know, I kind of think if they don't think they can put fans in the stands this fall, they'll be pushing somewhat hard to move that thing into 2021, because that's some revenue I'm not sure they can afford to lose.
I think, yeah, ultimately this all comes back to money. We've heard Mark Emmert with the NCAA is not willing to take a stance on making sure there's a uniform start to the college football season. You've got other places where Larry Scott says, Pac-12 commissioner says, hey, we're not going to have games if we can't have students. I find myself, Dashiell, sort of sorting through all the comments. There's a lot of smoke out there right now. How do you keep it all straight?
You know, it just amuses me how many people are out there making these definitive statements right now on May 13th when, well, we have no friggin' idea what's going to happen in 2 months. Wake me up in the middle of July, and then, you know, let's make some plans. You know, have some plans ready, but you really can't say what's going to happen until about the middle of July, because we don't know what the testing's going to be like. We don't know if there'll be any more treatments. I mean, the one that struck me from the Cal State thing yesterday was that, you know, they felt like they needed to have testing on campus once a week, and the cost of that was going to be $25 million a week. If school's got to do that, that's a lot of money to come up with just for testing, even if they can get the test. So I don't know. I think anybody making statements right now is just speculative. It's got to be 2 months from now when things really get solved. And Scott Barnes has said that too. He said the more time we take, the more information we have, there's going to be a sweet spot somewhere in there where we've got to make a decision. We just have to find that sweet spot on the calendar to make those decisions.
All right. When you get off this call, what do you go do right next? What's next on your to-do list? Because I know you're home.
Because I'm good. If you explain to people I'm on furlough this week.
No. You're on furlough. Now they know.
I'm on furlough. So,
you're not allowed to work. You can't work.
No, I'm not allowed to work. I'm allowed to work around here, though. I got plenty of work to do. I sent you the picture of my deck where I pressure washed it the other day. I'm going to clean off the top of my filing cabinet here. It's about two feet high with stuff. I'm just, you know, I'm trying to get down some stuff. I was going to build some shelves out at the laundromat, and
you know what you should do. You know you should do. You should get off this call and announce to everyone who's living at your house right now that you're on furlough. That's what you should do.
They pretty much, my wife's down teaching class in one bedroom, and my daughter's studying for finals in the other bedroom. So I don't think they'd even pay attention to me even if I said anything. So
I love it
the way it should be.
Nick Dashiell, and by the way, listeners weighing in, sort of lamenting what you were saying. One listener saying, the Bank of Dad never closes.
It never does. Even when he, well, Yeah, you're probably right. I don't know. I don't think anybody taps my mom and our family anymore for stuff, and she's in her 80s. But yeah, it's. I don't think it's going to close for at least 5 or 10 more years anyway.
There you go. I appreciate you, man. Thank you for making time.
All right.
Nick Daschle. There he is, of the Oregonian. He's on furlough. I didn't feel like I should mention that. That's his business if he wants to mention it. But the Oregonian requiring the editorial staff to take 1 week of furlough between now and July. I don't know how the hell I'm going to take a week of furlough. That they don't allow you to work, but that's what I do. So, you know, I guess I'll just tell them I'm on furlough. Maybe I'll just tell them I'm on furlough this week. Never mind what you see. Don't pay attention to me. All right, leave it here. Coming up, we got a 2 o'clock hour, of course. My wife will be joining us. You never know what's going to happen. People keep saying to me that my wife and I need to do a podcast. That's what we do on the show. It's essentially a daily podcast every day at 2:30. Make an appointment. Be here. Humans are trapped inside. We're all trapped inside. We're supposed to be distancing, at least, but apparently this has been beneficial to sharks, rays, and dolphins. Saw a story about how they're thriving because there aren't people in the water. Fewer people fishing, fewer people at the beach, fewer people harassing or, I guess, taking over beaches. And so there have been an increase in shark, ray, and dolphin sightings on the coasts in Florida and California and other places. So they're walking around, or swimming around, I should say. They're not walking. Swimming around, and they're going, hey, this is pretty nice. This is great. Also in Cocoa Beach, Florida, you know, they reopened the beach there in Florida at Cocoa Beach. Apparently, over the weekend, 12,000 pounds of trash had to be removed from the beach because people are littering. Alabama Adriana. React to that. 12,000 pounds of trash removed from Cocoa Beach after people were allowed back on the beach.
People have problems. I was just having this conversation last night. People have problems. Like, I'm serious. There's a problem with humanity that, like, I'll tell you all this. I littered one time, and my friend that was with me, the look of disgust on their face, I was like, all right, I'm never doing that again.
Yep.
Never. And I haven't since then. It's rude. It's disrespectful.
I think it's one of the ugliest things you can do. I think rudeness in general is ugly. But if you have such a lack of respect and such a self-importance that you're just going to deposit your waste on the ground and say, somebody else get that, or I don't care who gets that, that's another level of ugly. Pick up after yourself. I'm not going to say I've never littered because I have, but as an adult, I look back and I go, you know, that's not good. Cocoa Beach, keep your beaches clean. All right, coming up, we got Punch It Audio, I promise you.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.